Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You're listening to Toy Drive Live as we broadcast for 24 straight hours. We're making one final push with the Fans 15th Annual Toy Drive for Children's Wisconsin and Robin's Nest, courtesy of Blaine's Farm and Fleet, and presented by Annex Wealth Management. Go to 1250amthefan.com to donate online or to find the nearest fire station to drop off your toys. Now back to the show with Dan Plucker on 1250 AM The Fan.
Said back to the show with Dan Plucker, but I'm not the only host on this show. Let's give Ryan Horvath his props. Man, you still can't get your name on a show here in Milwaukee, Ryan.
Yeah, what the heck, man?
It's Ryan Horvath from BetMGM tonight, heard nationwide, joining me, Dan Plucker, who's usually with the Wendy's Big Show here on 1250 AM, The Fan, for Toy Drive Live, the 15th annual WSSP Toy Drive, benefiting Children's Wisconsin. And Horvath, before we get to a call, because we have Tony in Texas coming up here, tell us your experience this past year, because I know your son had a bit of a traumatic event and everything that went on with Children's Wisconsin and how they really helped him in his road to recovery to the point where you're bringing him back here so that he can get the great medical help that he got at Children's Wisconsin.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, so one day, it was Bears Packers last winter, and my wife and my son, they were like, all right, we're gonna go out sledding. And I was watching the game and I didn't really think a whole lot of it. I was like, okay. And then my wife calls me, and it was halftime of the game, and I was working on Bart's show the next morning, so I was taking notes watching the game. And she's like, hey, don't kill me, but I think Nathan broke his leg. We're going to the ER right now. And luckily, she took him to Children's Hospital. They got him right in, and it was a really bad injury. He broke his femur, which is tough for a seven-year-old, obviously. So he was in a wheelchair for a couple months. But we stayed there for about a week, and, man, they were the best, though. They would check on him, like, every other hour. He got unlimited meals, which he loved. Like, the kids never ate more mac and cheese, but all the doctors and all the nurses were, like, the best people, where, you know, not to get sappy, but I was almost, like, in tears because, I mean, I was a nervous wreck because, you know, my wife and I were staying there, and then, like, sometimes I would go home, and I tried to go back to work, so I would try to go home and, like, sleep for a couple hours, and I struggled, but just knowing that he was there and they were taking good care helped me, like, get through it, you know, for that week, and then they helped, obviously, like we still were going back. And that's in fact why when I moved to DC, he was still doing his regular checkups and his physical therapy. So my wife and him and Nathan, they actually stayed back for 3 months. So I was by myself in DC for three months, getting in all types of trouble by myself. But, so, luckily now he gets like, the last surgery done, and it's coming up on December 28th, actually. And so we're coming home on December 23rd to spend Christmas with the family so we could at least have some fun. And then we'll get that procedure done. But, yeah, we wanted the same doctor, the same surgeon, I should say, that did the surgery to kind of take the plate that he has out. So we're going to come back and love everything. And, you know, but the worst part about it, man, is, like, that week that you spend in the hospital, like, it's brutal because my son has a broken leg and I'm worried about, like, you know, the growth plate and him being able to walk normally and run and play sports and, you know, whatnot, walk down the aisle and stuff for graduation and his wedding. But at the same time, man, like when you're there, you realize that there's kids there that are dealing with much more serious things than a broken leg that don't get to go home. And then you think about those parents, man. And like when you have your own son or daughter, your own child, you know, you, the worst thing that you could think of is anything happening to them. Like, if my son has a cold, like, I would rather break my legs or, you know, die than him get sick. And that's how you feel when you have your own kid. So that was the thing that hurt me and, like, kind of, like, has always stuck with me, like, that week that we were there, seeing some of the kids that are there. So, especially with it being Christmas time, like, everybody should be able to enjoy the Christmas season. And the Christmas season is tough on some folks, you know, like, couple weeks, like last month, man, I lost my grandmother who I was really close with. And she pretty much raised me. And so it's going to be a rough holiday. Like, holidays are rough on people. And just think of how rough that is. You know, you got a child or your child's in children's, or you're sitting there, you're sick in the hospital. And I think everybody should be able to enjoy Christmas. So I think this is a great cause. And if you have, you know, anything, even if you have $1, $2 to donate, you know, and help get these kids some toys so they can enjoy the Christmas season, I think it is really important. But absolutely love Children's. I think it's the best hospital, and that's why we're traveling from Washington, D.C. to Milwaukee and staying for a couple weeks.
Exactly, and that's the kind of service that your donations and your toys are going to be going to people that are in situations like Horvat was last year right around this time, and situations that might be even be worse. No offense to Horvat's situation, but like said, like kids with worse diseases and things that are going on in their life, where a toy, a donation like that can really change their mind for even a second. Like, putting a smile on somebody's face in that situation can change a day, can change a minute, can change an hour of a child's life. And that's really the impact that it can have. So go to 1250amthefan.com. You can donate money there or an actual toy drop location at several different fire stations across southeastern Wisconsin. That whole list, again, on 1250amthefan.com. Let's go out to Tony in Texas here. I know he's been wanting to get on. Tony, welcome to Toy Drive Live with Dan Plucker and Ryan Horvat.
Hey, I'm talking to a diehard Packer fan and the host of the Packer postgame.
Yeah, what's going on, dude?
How's it going? So, Ryan, I'm glad little Nathan's doing okay.
He's doing really good. Actually, he got cleared for, like, so he's been running and, like, doing everything, but now he just gets that, like, plate thing out. So he's all good to go, man. Full go. He'll be cleared. He'll be able to play baseball and do everything again.
Nice. Hey, did you guys watch the game tonight, the
yes.
Saints Cowboys?
It was
brutal. Terrible.
You know, Tim Tebow's not in the league. How is he not any worse than Taysom Hill?
Taysom Hill is terrible. Tony, remember when everybody in Wisconsin was freaking out and they wanted the Packers to keep Taysom Hill? Imagine if the Packers keep Taysom Hill and, like, Mike McCarthy loses his mind and does what Sean Payton did for years, where Drew Brees would be cooking, like, 11 for 12, like, 185 yards, two touchdowns. They're in the red zone, and here comes Taysom Hill for two plays, like, and then he fumbles or even, you know, runs the ball for 5 yards. It's just like they try to get too cute with him. He's a hell of a football player, don't get me wrong, football player, but he's not an NFL quarterback. That's all. That's the hardest position on the planet to play. Why do they continue to try to make Taysom Hill a thing? Especially an offensive genius like Sean Payton. You pay him all that money. That is the one thing, though. Like, if you look at the contract, the way that they did it, while it's still a lot of money, it isn't as much as it looks like.
Yeah, it's crazy, Ryan. If you think about that game last year against the Saints, we won because of a Taysom Hill fumble.
Fumble, yeah.
Yeah. And dude has absolutely no deep ball. Like, it is one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen. He had a wide open receiver. I think it was in the second or third quarter of today's game, where if he just puts it on the pylon, it's the easiest touchdown in the world. Instead, he threw it like 5 yards short of somebody on a crossing route. It was unreal.
And see, that's the thing, like, with some of these dudes, like, you know who has it and who doesn't. And that's why, like, so, like, let's go with Jalen Hurts. Like, I do like Jalen Hurts, and I think he could be, like, a weapon, but he's never even going to be Lamar. You know, like, because there's a whole side of the field that he can't throw the ball to. And that's the same thing with Taysom Hill. And that's why I don't understand why, I don't know. I feel like if you have somebody like that, you kind of have to get a classic dropback quarterback. That's why I struggle watching him in college sometimes. Like, look at some of these schools. Like, if you're Florida, some of these SEC schools, why doesn't anybody, like, draft? Why doesn't anybody recruit actual quarterbacks? Everybody's, like, athlete. You know what I mean? Like, I can't watch any more Emory Jones, man. Like, please, for the love of God, start recruiting quarterbacks again.
Oh, but Adrian Martinez, he's in the portal now. Everybody's going to want him, Horvat.
Where is he going? he'll probably end up backing up. No, you know what? He'll end up with the Badgers.
Yeah, that's what Sparky was telling me earlier, that he wants Adrian Martinez. He thinks he would be better than Graham Mertz.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe. That's not really saying a whole lot, is it, Tony?
No, I was going to say Graham Burch. That is tough to watch. And that guy was a 4-star recruit.
Yeah, what was going – and you know what? Here's the thing about Mertz, and I thought he was the real deal because he's a 4-star recruit. He's going to Wisconsin, so then you dig in and you watch the film, and you're like, I don't know about the competition he's playing, but he can make the throws. Then he plays in the All-American Bowl or whatever it is, and remember how good he looked in that? And then
he lit it up. And then
against Illinois, what did he throw, like 3 incompletions, and he was cooking, then he catches COVID, so I gave him a pass, because then he also injures his throwing shoulder, so you're like, okay, I mean, that's a rough couple months for a kid to catch COVID before we knew even what COVID was, really, and then he injures his shoulder. Let's see what he looks like next year with an actual run game, because we also have to remember last year, they couldn't run the football, their offensive line wasn't the same, and he just can't make the throws, and you know what the crazy thing about him is? Like, he looks, I mean, he believes in himself. I mean, good thing he got the money when he did. Like, somebody probably in, like, one of the, like, third world countries is probably rocking some Graham Mertz gear and some Spencer Rattler gear, like, you know, and some maybe JT Daniels gear. Remember when JT Daniels and Spencer Rattler were the two leading candidates to win the Heisman? Oh, neither even start for their team. But, yeah, I don't think Mertz, all that said, I don't think Mertz is any good. And people still try to defend him. And I'm like, look, I was wrong because I thought he was going to be good.
The thing is,
still in my mentions are like, it's not him, it's Paul Chris. And I'm like, no, it's Mertz. No. It's both, but it's Mertz more.
The thing is, these ratings and the star system, it's flawed. It just is. Like, there's so many 4-star quarterbacks. It goes to, like, the 300th ranked overall player in the class that can still be a 4-star recruit. And it's just like, okay, that's what, 12, right. 15 quarterbacks maybe? Are all of those guys going to be D1 starting caliber quarterbacks? No, it's just not the way it works. I mean, I think back to Michigan's quarterback last year, Joe Milton. He was a 4-star quarterback as well. He was terrible. And then Tennessee picked him up. He went to Tennessee. He's been awful at Tennessee this year too. And it's just, I don't know, the star system is flawed in some ways, and some guys just can't make that high school to college adjustment. It's a big adjustment. It's a change of speed. It's a change of some of these guys have never even learned how to read defenses. Almost none of these guys play under center more. It's all in drop or all in shotgun formations and all this stuff in high school for them. So it's a completely different game for so many of these dudes when they get to the college level, and they just can't adjust to the much better competition that they face. And in Graham Mertz's situation, he was in Overland Park, Kansas, I think, in his high school days, playing like D3 in Kansas, I want to say. Like, it's really tough to judge a dude who lights up maybe not the best competition in the world in a smaller state like Kansas compared to, you know, guys in California that are rolling at modern day high school and all these different schools. How do you judge those two against each other? It's
great
difficult.
Great point, because I coach AAU basketball, and these kids are playing basketball 12 months out of the year. They don't do that in football.
No, unless they're in Florida or California.
Yeah. But, you know,
but they're not playing competition. Right, right.
But they'll go to camps and they'll get looked at in the summertime, and maybe they'll flash or show something. And that's what they get looked at, Dan.
Exactly.
Like, ooh, they threw the ball far.
Let me ask you guys this really quick then. Do you think a lot of it has to do with, like, just that a lot of these universities, their offensive coordinators, their quarterback coaches, or their head coaches, like, let's say you have a defensive-minded head coach, right? Do you think, like P.J. Fleck, do you think that a lot of that has to do with the development? Because why does Lincoln Riley constantly hit on quarterbacks, except for this year? Like, okay, so he also didn't really have a long leash for Spencer Rattler. Like,
no, he didn't.
I mean, I didn't really think Rattler should have got benched. I didn't think he was playing all that bad. I mean, does he make some bad decisions? Yes. But does he also have, like, crazy arm talent? Yes. I don't know why you would go with a running quarterback when that's not your offense. But I don't know. You think that has something to do? Like, look at Lane Kiffin even. Like, look at the quarterbacks he works with when he was at Bama and now at Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. He completely changed Matt Corral. Matt Corral is now going to be most likely the first quarterback selected. And look at everything that he changed, like his footwork. He uses his legs more. I just think a lot of it has to do with kind of who's not evaluate, like who's coaching these guys up when they get there. Mm-hmm. Do you agree? Or is just quarterback play just like suck now collegiately? Because, like, look at these games. It's rough to watch.
Well, you know, remember, was it Tepford that was Rodgers' coach back at Cal?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he got a lot of respect, a lot of props back then. But when Aaron came back into the NFL, he had to change his form. He had to totally redo his form to be more conducive to the system, to the NFL game. So, Ryan, I think a lot of that is true, but, you know, these coaches are out for themselves, Ryan. And I kind of want to get into the Brian Kelly thing a little bit. These coaches and what's going on at the carousel right now with Brian Kelly. He's got a fake Cajun accent. You hear that, Brian?
Yeah, that was the most ridiculous thing. I can't believe that, man. So he goes and he grabs the microphone and he starts, "I'll see y'all and me and my family." And he's never talked like that. You know what's great is if you do like a side-by-side and go back to his interview with Dan Patrick, the way that he spoke on that last one that he did with Patrick. Mm-hmm. Like, the dude literally just picked up a fake accent. He is such a clown, man. I have so much respect for Tommy Rees for sticking with that program because, like, let's look at it like this, man. Like, Tommy Rees, I know that, okay, so he got a little bit of a pay bump at Notre Dame, and Notre Dame is a prestigious job, and let's face facts. He got millions more to stay there and call plays, and he loves Marcus. I think Notre Dame got it right. I'm glad that we got some youth there. I'm actually fired up, and I think Brian Kelly's a great football coach, but I think he's a terrible human being, so good riddance, to be quite honest with you. But I thought that was a really ballsy move, man, and I gained a lot of respect for Tommy Rees because he passes up going to LSU, and I know he's a Notre Dame kid, but I don't know, man, like to stick with his kids, and then he stands up. I don't know. I just thought that was classy. Like, I still think there is some good in the college football world. I think, like, Luke Fickell is really a guy that cares about his kids. Yeah. And then look at Matt Campbell. Go back and watch that video on senior day. Like, there's a guy that recruited those kids, and even though they were kind of a letdown, let's be honest, that's a top-10 team that has, what, 4 losses this season? He's still there in tears, like, hugging them on senior day. I think there's still some good dudes, but I think, Tony, you're right. For the most part, man, these guys are out for themselves. And we always, like, Brian Kelly, every stop he does this. What a clown. Look at the Matt LaFleur story. He had him and Robert Saleh parking cars. Like, let's be honest, Brian Kelly killed a kid.
Yeah.
Well, and don't forget about it, the Danny Petrinos of the world, Ryan. Those guys.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So.
Yeah, so, Tony, we're super late for a break, so I'm going to let you go. But, hey, appreciate you joining us here for a few.
Good talking to you, Dan. Good talking to you guys. Have a great show and for a good cause. I'm glad you guys gave me the time. Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
Tony. Yeah, thanks, Tony. Yeah, well, Horvath, I want to touch on one thing that you said there and you know, kind of Spencer Rattler and then moving on to Caleb Williams and maybe it being a little too quick. The thing is, like, it makes me think, like, if you have superstar talent backing up superstar talent, which a lot of people thought Caleb Williams is going to be a superstar. I mean, look what freaking Alabama did in the national championship game. Jalen Hurts, who winds up being a second-round pick to the Eagles a couple years later, is at Alabama, and they're like, okay, well, we're gonna sit you out for the second half for a dude that has literally not started a game in his career in college. Tua comes in and then absolutely lights it up, wins the national championship for Alabama, almost single-handedly bringing that team back from the dead against Georgia in that national championship game. And then all of a sudden, it's the Tua hype all year. The next season, he gets hurt, and he's still a top-5 pick in the NFL draft. It's absolutely crazy when you have that kind of talent. You think you have that kind of talent backing up. And if it puts you in a situation to win a tough game, which the first time that Spencer Rattler was subbed out was in that Texas game, and Caleb Williams looked incredible in that second half to bring them back to beat a terrible Texas team. But when you are in those situations, I think it's almost like a heat of the moment type of thing where maybe Spencer Rattler can do that, but you want to just give, like, another guy a chance. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. No, I completely agree. And, like, that's a great point. But and I feel like there's only certain programs that could do that where you go from 5-star to 5-star. Mm-hmm. Alabama, because, like, you're a Michigan fan. I'm a Notre Dame fan. And even our teams, like, rarely get the quarterback. Like, no. I still miss the days of Brady Quinn, dude. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I miss the days of Chad Henne.
I really like Cade. I think he's a tough kid. I really do. Too. I think he's good. But you get what I'm saying? Like, there are certain programs that could do that. And you know what's funny? Like, really quick, going back to Alabama, like, about that situation, too, is, like, Saban, like, a lot of times will just go with the guy that, like, the locker room buys into more. Because last year, they were saying that Bryce in camp looked a lot better than Mac, but the locker room believed in Mac, and, you know, it was his time, and, you know, he sat, and then he waited, and they actually thought Bryce was actually the better option. And you look at it now, man, Mac Jones is the starting quarterback for the New England Patriots who
are 8-4.
who I think, like, legitimately could win the Super Bowl. And a lot of that has to do with what he's doing. Like, he's been really good. He's pushing the ball down the field now. They've taken the handcuffs off a little bit. But that just shows, like, certain programs, Alabama, LSU, like, that is why guys like Brian Kelly aren't loyal because everybody's trying to get one of those jobs or everybody's trying to get to the NFL. Let's face it. Like, I just got done raving about Matt Campbell and how he was crying on senior day. Dude, everybody was saying if Lincoln Riley doesn't take the USC job, Matt Campbell's taking that job. And then he was just at a kid's house who he was making promises to. And then he has to tell that kid, hey, by the way, I'm actually not going to be here. So you're either changing your plans or you're coming to play for another coach. So I think that is the one thing. It's like that in anything in life, though. Like, we rage on these coaches and like, oh, man, how could you do that to the kids? But like, put it in your situation or my situation. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, let's say you're, I don't know, working at a radio station, you know, and you're a board op, and then you get a call from New York City. Hey, we heard you guest fill in, and we want to give you a national gig Monday through Friday, $1 million. Obviously, you're going to take that, even if it's like, hey, right, guys, I got to leave. You got to run your own board on Tuesday. And then they're like, oh, this jerk, he let us down. But everybody's looking out for themselves and their own family. Like, we've got to face facts. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and as tough as it was, like, for Brian Kelly, he's, from what it sounds like, he's only making like $2.5 million at Notre Dame, and
he's
now he's making
jerk.
Like 9.5 at LSU. Like, to that, I'll give him credit. But the way he left Notre Dame was absolutely in shambles. We'll continue this college football conversation. We really need to hit a break.
Yeah.
We'll continue this college football conversation. We'll make our picks for the top conference championship games, maybe even our betting picks for these games as well, Horvath. I know you usually do that with the NFL, with Bart on Fridays, right? Well, today I want you to do it with, and now I guess it's Friday as well, some college football picks with me, Dan Plucker, and Ryan Horvath here on Toy Drive Live. Remember, use hashtag FanToyDrive on social media to get the word out there, or tell your friends, tell your family. And you can also go to 1250amthefan.com. It is the Fan's 15th annual Toy Drive for Children's Wisconsin and Robin's Nest, courtesy of Blaine's Farm and Fleet, and presented by Annex Wealth Management. More next here on The Fan.
WSSP Milwaukee. Donate today for the 15th annual Fan Toy Drive for Children's Wisconsin.
It is Christmas time.
Thank you for listening, and happy holidays from The Fan. The Packers are sitting pretty at 9-3. They may have a bye this week, but we don't. We're talking Packers football. This is WSSP Milwaukee, 1250 AM The Fan, an Odyssey station.
You're listening to Toy Drive Live as we broadcast for 24 straight hours. We're making one final push with the Fan's 15th annual Toy Drive for Children's Wisconsin and Robin's Nest, courtesy of Blaine's Farm and Fleet, and presented by Annex Wealth Management. Go to 1250amthefan.com to donate online or to find the nearest fire station to drop off your toys. Now back to the show with Dan Plucker on 1250 AM The Fan.
It is Dan Plucker from the Wendy's Big Show hanging out with you for about two more hours here on Toy Drive Live. We're almost halfway through this thing already, which is crazy for our portion of the show. Ryan Horvath from BetMGM along with me, and it's a shame that his name is not on there, because the biggest thing for the longest time here was Ryan Horvath not getting his name on a show here on 1250 AM The Fan, and still he's getting disrespected and should have his name here as well. An absolute honor and privilege to be hanging out with you here for the 15th annual WSSP Toy Drive benefiting Children's Wisconsin and Robin's Nest. And again, you can go to 1250amthefan.com to donate money and also drop off at, I don't know, we have 15, 20 different fire stations along with us. You can see that complete list on 1250amthefan.com as well. Follow us on Twitter at 1250amthefan. You're at Ryan Horvath on Twitter, right, Ryan?
Yes, and sir,
And I'm at Dan Plucker, P-L-O-C-H-E-R, to follow me there on Twitter as well if you like what you're hearing. I'm also on the Green Gold Post Game Show sometimes, and he is on BetMGM weeknights from, what time is that here at Central Time? I can't think right now.
It's a great question. 6 to 10, your guys' time.
6 to 10, our time. You can listen to it on the Odyssey app. Not actually on the 1250 AM The Fan airwaves, but download that Odyssey app and catch Ryan Horvath. That's right after Rami is done as well, so switch from Rami and the Rami Show to Ryan Horvath on BetMGM tonight. It's a perfect transition there for you. And coming up in about an hour and a half from right now, the producer of the Rami Show, Sam Schmitz, and Toby Altizer from the Bart Winkler Show will be hopping on for a couple hours leading up to Bart's show as we do our 24-hour radiothon
for the 15th annual Toy Drive benefiting Children's Wisconsin and Robin's Nest. Real quick, Tavern Wisconsin Sports tweeted at us the 2015 Packers draft, and we had to bring this up just shortly. Let's go through some of these picks, Ryan, and give some really cutting-edge analysis on some of these dudes. So the first round pick, number 30 overall for the Green Bay Packers in 2015, was Demarius Randall.
Okay, so Demarius Randall, I absolutely loved his rookie year. I remember he blew up a screen pass, and I was like, oh, man, I've been waiting for this my entire life. I really like this guy. And then his second year, he completely forgot how to play football. Mike McCarthy. And then the other thing was, like, not only did he completely suck, but he was always, like spouting off. Like, he was always, like, after the game, like, in his pressers, like, ripping somebody or like blaming somebody else right. To the point where even like, you know, the famous quote from Mike McCarthy was Demarius needs to clean his own house or whatever it was. I don't remember, you know, typical Mike McCarthy thing, but it was right. It was like, exactly. Demarius, who are you calling? There was the game where they just sent Demarius home. McCarthy was like, just get out. Like, don't even grab a bagel. Just go home. So what a huge bust. But I will say, like, I do get what Ted saw in him because I don't know what it was. Even like in Cleveland, like he showed flashes. But, like, he just seemed like he didn't care. But he was, when he wanted to be, he was an aggressive player. And then his second year, completely forgot how to play, was terrible. So, yes, a bust of a pick.
And then eventually traded, if I remember correctly, traded for DeShone Kizer, correct? That was the deal.
Yeah, the worst quarterback in NFL history.
Well, we'll get to maybe another name that should be put on that list as well in the fifth round of this draft. But second round pick, number 62 overall, was Quinton Rollins, a cornerback who was just absolutely terrible for the Packers.
Yes, Seth Rollins, the wrestler, would have probably been a better choice because here's what I never understood. Quinton Rollins, like, wasn't a football player, right? Like, he played college basketball at Miami University. Not like Miami University from 2010 to 2014.
Miami, Ohio.
So he actually finished, I believe he finished second in Red Hawks history with 214 career steals. I'm not even kidding you. That was really? Quinton Rollins. Yeah, he was a basketball player. I want to say he's still there. And I want to say he's like fifth or fourth in career assists. But that's he didn't crazy. Even join the football team until 2014. He played one season of football in the MAC. And granted, he had like 7 picks or 8 picks, maybe even double-digit picks. Like, he had a really good year. But the dude played football for 1 year, and the Packers take him in the second round. He wasn't a football player. Brutal pick. I hated it from the start.
Yeah, and just tough overall. I remember even the days of, like, Calvin Johnson and some of these great Lions receivers, because back then it was Golden Tate on that team, too. Marvin Jones was a little bit on the up-and-up at that time as well, going up against Quinton Rollins, and that was a little bit of a mess for the Packers, I remember. And a real reason why, I think, in the last couple of years of Mike McCarthy and Green Bay, why they struggled so much was because their secondary was so bad with Demarius Randall and relying on guys like Quinton Rollins as well to be there for that team. Just ugly, ugly time for the Packers. In 2016 and 17 was the two really bad years he was there, right? If I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, he was brutal, man. 2 years, a second round pick, and that was the 62nd. The worst part about this exercise right here, man, is if you look at the whole board and you see who the Packers selected, and even there's even been some misses even from like Goot, you know, the last couple mm-hmm. of years under Ted. But when you look at the fact that like the Packers could have Terry McLaurin in the slot, but they go with Jay Sternberger, like it's just right. that kind of stuff that could drive you nuts when you do this exercise.
Yeah,
but
and that's why a little bit of me hates doing this kind of stuff, because you could always say, oh, well, there's this player that was a couple of picks later. But in reality, like, nobody was probably actually looking at that guy except for the team. Like, look at the Giannis draft, and there's a whole freaking podcast, like 3-episode podcast by Adrian Wojnarowski of what all of the other teams were thinking, picking before Giannis's pick at 15 for the Bucks or 14, whatever it was. And he goes through pick by pick of what all these different GMs and teams were thinking before the Giannis selection. And it's just like, this is what goes on, but for 7 rounds in the NFL draft and not 2 in the NBA. And it's just so difficult, I think, to actually make the right selection. So when your team does, especially in that second, third, fourth round where you really hit on dudes, it's a good thing. Even like A.J. Dillon in the 2020 draft, this
in 2020, like that looks like it's going to be a really good pick for the Packers. AJ Dillon could be the running back of the future for all we know. And so I don't know. And people still like begrudgingly talk about that pick. It's like, no, you have a starter in from a second round pick. That's a good thing, not a bad thing.
Oh, he's never going to be, well, like as long as Aaron Jones is there, he's not right. going to be the every down back, but he's become RB1. I mean, because he could mm-hmm. do it all. The question with him, the reason why I thought second round, because I loved AJ Dillon at Boston College.
Me too.
He would just run over
just
dudes.
An animal, man.
But here's what I didn't understand about the pick. I was like, ooh, in LaFleur's offense, all right, doesn't he want like a pass catching running back? And I was like, okay, not really, because he's going to fill the Jamal Williams role, mm-hmm. which is one of the best pass protecting running backs in the league. Get you those hard yard, you know, like the 4 or 5 yards. You give him the ball in red zone and goal line situations. But no, like AJ Dillon, they just don't throw the ball to the running backs at Boston College at the time. Like that wasn't their offense, because he's a great pass catcher. He's made some great grabs. And like, I love Aaron Jones, but he can't handle 20 to 25 carries. Like, it's funny when you look at him and AJ Dillon, like when you really get an idea of how small Aaron Jones is when they put him up next to AJ Dillon, you see them like standing next to each other yeah. in practice. And
crazy.
AJ Dillon looks like a grown man and Aaron Jones looks like a child. So I just feel like
he's
AJ
a high
Dillon,
schooler. Yeah. It's so weird.
He's RB1 now, man, because he could do it all.
Yeah. And I brought that up at the Green Gold post game show too, Ryan. So I'm happy you're kind of thinking similarly, because I'm like, at what point does Dillon start seeing the same amount of touches in a game as Aaron Jones, or even more?
Second half last week, I think second half, and I know Aaron Jones probably shouldn't even be out there, but I think the mm-hmm. second half said a lot last week, where LaFleur, and you know when you really start to take notice too, is if you listen to the Pat McAfee show, or you just listen to these pressers after the game when Rodgers and LaFleur speak.
Yeah.
Okay, so LaFleur is going to say good things about all the guys, but when Rodgers starts to hype right. up a guy, that's when Rodgers goes, because him and LaFleur have this relationship, you know, him and actually all the coaches have this relationship, where he could go and he could say, hey, on third downs, I want Alan Lazard. Now he's going to say, hey, you know, I love Jonesy, but I love me some A.J. Dillon, because he's running over dudes and
right.
he could pass protect and he's running over guys. I love those guys on the field at the same time.
The one thing I don't get is how in every single goal line situation are you just not giving the ball to A.J. Dillon and like bull rushing him into the end zone? Like
exactly.
Literally they should bring in like Kenny Clark as a fullback, like Vita Vea does with the Buccaneers, and just have him like open up a huge gap by just laying down on the defensive line, the opposing defensive line, and having A.J. Dillon jump over the top. It's the easiest touchdown in the world. And then, or play action that with a little screen to Davante Adams and dish it out to him in the corner for an easy walk-in touchdown, too. It's like, it has to be like the most lethal combo, or one of the most lethal combos in the NFL, with a huge back like Dillon and the talented both behind the line of scrimmage and a route runner that Davante Adams is. I don't know if there's a better combo on the goal line than that, and it surprises me how little success the Packers have had in those red zone goal line situations all season long.
All season long.
I know, it's crazy.
They win the Super Bowl last year, too, if they could just cash in on those situations.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like, Rodgers could hit MVS for a 75-yard touchdown pass. Well, now he can. I mean, for the first couple weeks of the season, we were questioning if he's ever going to hit the deep ball ever again.
Right.
He's found that once again. But, like, yeah, I mean, that's the only thing. Like, I love LaFleur. I love the scripted drives. Like, I love what he opens up with on those first three series, and I always love what he comes out with in the second half. But I do feel like the play calling sometimes in the red zone, in-game management in the red zone sometimes, I don't know if that's him or Rodgers, because I know
right.
Rodgers has a lot of say too. Sometimes it's just baffling. Let's not make this overcomplicated, right? The other thing, like, as good as the offensive line has been really quickly, I'll say this.
Yeah.
Like, is in pass protection, not great in run blocking this year. Like, that's why A.J. Dillon is going to have the better season, not only just because of injuries, because he's a guy that could take more after the initial contact, right? Like, with the, you know, the yards
yeah,
after contact.
Yeah, he's a little more of a bruiser.
Because the offensive line, and a lot of that has to do with, man, I mean, now you're without Elgton Jenkins and you haven't
Bakhtiari,
had Bakhtiari healthy, but still, like, that's one area that they've struggled. So maybe that's why we haven't seen A.J. Dillon as much as we want in the red zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt. It's a great point. But now going from talking about a really good running back with A.J. Dillon back to this 2015 draft with a really bad hybrid running back wide receiver in Ty Montgomery, who had that awful fumble. Was it against the Saints, I want to say, a couple years back on a kickoff return?
The Ty Montgomery one?
Yeah, on a kickoff return. Was it against the Saints?
That one, I want to say, was that the Rams game? Because they lost two really close ones. That was the year McCarthy gets fired.
Yeah.
They lose, I want to say he takes it out. I want to say that was against the
Rams.
But he
took it out when he shouldn't have, and then he fumbled it, and they took over and scored right away, and it pretty much sealed the game, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, you want to hear a funny story about that really quickly? Mm-hmm. So he got cut, and before you know, he's gone, he was actually on our station the next night on the huddle show, and I was running the board, and I was like, dude, this timeout. And I was thinking, like, he was getting, like, death threats. Like, I was like, is Ty even going to show up? Is he going to show up? And dude, I got to give him credit. Like, he showed up, and he took it like a man. Funny story, like, I always thought Ty Montgomery would be, like, the nicest guy. One of the, like, Bart said the same thing. Tough guy to interview, man. If you ask him a question, I asked him, he was coming off an injury, just about, like, how he rehabbed it. And he's like, oh, I'm just fine. The injury wasn't nothing. And, like, just blew me off. And I was like, well, you missed multiple weeks, but all right, dude. So kind of a jerk a little bit.
Okay, well, I didn't know that, but I do remember that huddle interview and it being really awkward because we all kind of knew that probably something was going to be up there. And it was like, oh, well, he's still on the show as of right now. And we were kind of discussing that all day. Another guy who kind of had a rough tenure in Green Bay was linebacker Jake Ryan, Michigan product, who looked pretty good coming out of college, but just couldn't stay healthy.
God, Jake Ryan was a tough watch, man.
And he was not very good, yes, especially in coverage. I think he was one of the worst coverage linebackers in the NFL for like two seasons running.
So as great as, and I had to check, it was the Rams, as great as like, oh man, like the outside linebackers and like the pass rushers and the defensive line. And like Green Bay's had some great pass rushers from Reggie White, obviously, Clay Matthews, but like the inside linebacker position has always driven me nuts. I liked AJ Hawk, but just where AJ Hawk was selected.
Right.
I'm not going to say he won a Super Bowl, but he wasn't what we wanted him to be out of Ohio State. Oh man. I mean, just so much. Brad Jones. You're lucky you weren't around for the Brad Jones era. Like always in coverage was just getting burned by tight ends, getting absolutely destroyed across the middle. And then finally they find Blake Martinez, who I absolutely loved. And on the morning show, everybody would crush me. And I would say Blake Martinez leads the league in tackles, 150 tackles every year. What's your guys' issue with Blake Martinez?
I always like
those tackles are 5 yards down the field. Blake Martinez is a great player. Was he great in coverage? No. That's why you draft somebody like Patrick Queen that could actually play in coverage. You know what I mean?
Right.
Shaq Barrett. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Jake Ryan, not a very good player. Let's move on to a guy who started for a year when Rodgers hurt himself, Brett Hundley. Was also in this 2015 draft class. And that's where we'll stop, because after that, it's a bunch of guys that I've hardly ever heard of. Except for Aaron Ripkowski, great fullback for like a year.
I was going to say, I did love me some Ripper until he fumbled against Atlanta in the game where Ladarius Gunter was trying to cover Julio Jones, and then I was done with Ripper. But I just saw him. He popped up on my Instagram the other day. That guy is in shape.
I never understood why they drafted that guy or gave him the light of day, especially when you had John Kuhn on the team still. Like, they had like three fullbacks that one year, and it was just like, what are you doing with this position? It doesn't make any sense.
And now that position's like pretty much been eliminated from the league.
Exactly.
No, I did like the Ripper though, and then Hundley really quickly, and then we can move away from this. Brett Hundley, maybe the worst starting quarterback in league history. I just got done saying that about DeShone Kizer. The reason I was so hard on Kizer is because obviously I'm a Notre Dame fan, and I never liked him at Notre Dame. There was a year where people were like, man, I could see Kizer because of his ceiling being the number one quarterback taken, and I was like, are you guys need LASIK surgery or glasses? He is terrible. Like, look at him in the red zone, and then his year in Cleveland leads the league in red zone turnovers. He was bad. But Hundley, oh God, one of the worst years of my life, dude. And I know that sounds like a little dramatic, but I live for the Packers. Rodgers goes down. It's in look at it like this, man. Jordy's last year. Here's where I'll never forgive Brett Hundley. Jordy's last year in Green Bay was not spent catching back shoulder touchdowns from Aaron Rodgers or winning a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. It was spent trying to catch ground balls from Brett frickin' Hundley, and then me having to hear, oh, Jordy's lost the step. No, Jordy is a try-hard, but even Jordy's not trying hard when he sees who's behind center. Hundley sucked. The only guy that produced that year was Devontae, and that's because Devontae was still in the process of trying to earn the bag. So I think that Jordy still had two more good years, and I think Brett Hundley is the worst quarterback ever to play in the league, and that includes Nathan Peterman, who threw, what, six picks in a game?
One game, yeah. Yeah, Brett Hundley, I remember actually at UCLA, I saw him play a game at the Rose Bowl. Not the actual Rose Bowl, Rose Bowl Stadium, though. We got free tickets because my dad was a teacher, and they did, like, these teacher appreciation days where you could go to two games a year and get free tickets and sit in the student section. So I went with my dad, and I actually got a picture with Brett Hundley right after the game. He walked up to me and just me, took a photo with me, and then walked into the locker room. I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. I still have that picture somewhere. It's the worst picture of me ever. I'm like a freshman in high school, and I don't look like I should be a freshman in high school. I got these ugly braces on, zits all over my face, but it was like my Facebook profile picture for like 2 years because I thought that was the coolest thing. I got a photo with Brett Hundley, who is now in the NFL. So I kind of had this like rooting interest for him, and I was like, wherever he goes, I'm gonna root for him. Then as a Lions fan, he gets drafted by the Packers, and I'm like, come on, are you kidding
the one
me?
Place
the one place I didn't want him drafted, and he goes to Green Bay, and then I'm just sitting there and watching him play, and I'm like, oh, let's go, Brett Hundley's finally getting his chance, you know, he's gonna be hopefully he'll be at least somewhat okay in the league. And he was
serviceable, yeah,
god awful. He was so bad,
and you know
he
what
was so bad.
You know what I'll say on that really quick, because I'm glad that you brought that up, because I don't trash Ted for that one, though, because, I mean, where did they get him in the fourth?
Hundley, I don't even remember. Yeah, fifth round. It was a fifth rounder. Yeah.
I liked him out of UCLA.
Yeah, so did
I. In fact, dude, so he actually goes back to UCLA. If he doesn't go back to UCLA.
Yeah, he would have been the number one pick.
He would have brought, yeah, exactly. So yeah. I agree. Like, he has, kind of a down year. Like, that's the same thing with Justin Fields. Not quite that dramatic, but Justin Fields, it was, okay, Trevor Lawrence is going to go one and Fields is going to go two. Mm-hmm. Fields has a little bit of a down year, which I don't think he was properly judged. It was a pandemic season with no fans, and he never knew who was going to be on the field with him because of COVID. But, yeah, I mean, with Hundley, I didn't like bash the pick because he had a nice career at UCLA, and I thought he would at least be serviceable. I thought he was going to be solid. He was also a good dude. Like, that's the one thing. Like, all these backup quarterbacks, you know, none of them are ever going to be any good. Tim Boyle. But what they're there for is obviously to hold a clipboard and to be Rodgers' like buddy, to wrestle around with like Rodgers. Like, look at Tim Boyle. You know what I mean? That was Hundley. Mm-hmm. Like, Rodgers doesn't want to feel threatened. That's why Brett didn't like Aaron. Brett always got along great with all of his backups. You know why? They weren't a threat. You know why Aaron didn't love the Jordan Love pick? Because he's a threat. Although, we made that up. Dude, Aaron and Jordan Love get along great. Because Aaron knows that Jordan's not a threat. Mac Jones.
Yeah. Yeah.
He might be like, I don't know if I like this kid. I don't know if I'm calling him J-Love and taking photos. But
yeah, I don't know. That, you're probably right. And it was, I think last year for Rodgers, it was a bit of that competitive drive where it was like, oh, really? Now you're going to draft a quarterback? Like, I'll show you. I'll be an MVP.
And
now he did that. Like, he obviously showed, like, okay, that we're not moving on from Aaron Rodgers anymore. And he, as he would like to say, I threw a wrench in the plans of the organization. And then now this year, you're right. I think Rodgers has seen enough of Jordan Love to be like, dude, I'm way better than this guy, you know?
Yeah,
like,
and that's
like,
not a knock on Love.
It's no, just, it's not. Know. It's because not everybody's Aaron Rodgers. Like, we were talking about quarterbacks. Exactly. Nobody. We were talking about quarterbacks in the college game and evaluating quarterbacks from high school to college with the whole like Graham Mertz situation and all these 4-stars and 5-star players that don't necessarily pan out to their abilities in college. The same thing is true from adjustments to the college to NFL level. And I'm not saying that Jordan Love is going to be a bust. And so many people are thinking because of his one start, he's never going to be a good quarterback in this league. That's not at all what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, it's once in a generation that you get a guy like Aaron Rodgers. It's once in a generation you get a guy like Brett Favre. And the Packers were lucky enough, and God, as people love to say, God loves the Packers, and God blessed them with back-to-back Hall of Fame quarterbacks, to just expect Jordan Love, when he eventually takes over for Aaron Rodgers, whether that's next year, 5 years from now, whenever it may be, to expect that he's going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback is just mind-boggling to me. I think a lot of Packer fans are going to have a rude awakening at some point when Jordan Love is their starter and they don't have that dude in 12 or 4 that can literally make them a Super Bowl team every single year.
And so that was the thing, like, with it, too, is everybody thinks I'm, like, this huge Jordan Love hater, and I'm not. And Jordan Love was always going to be a project. But the only way that Jordan Love's ever going to get better, because, like, let's be honest, you see good from Jordan Love. You see a lot of good, and you see a lot of upside, and then you see some downside. Here's the thing. Everybody has this, like, weird idea that Rodgers got better because he played behind Favre. Did he learn some things from Favre? Yeah, you want to know what he learned? Not to throw the ball into triple coverage and how to learn to read an NFL defense. Like, Jordan Love is not going to get better just from sitting behind Aaron Rodgers. He's going to get better from going on the field and making these stupid mistakes that Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson go out there and make and seeing actual NFL defenses that are trying to assassinate him rather than his defense, you know, on scout team. That's the only thing with Jordan Love. Like, and like you said, dude, when you find a Brett Favre, an Aaron Rodgers, hell, even if you have like a Matthew Stafford, my thing is I just like ride it out with those guys. Like, I'll take the down years of Peyton Manning. Look at it like this. A, the Broncos won a Super Bowl with that down year of Peyton Manning because of their defense, because they had a veteran that at the end of the year, like in those playoff games, just wasn't going to turn the ball over. Although, you know what, man, he was bad. That's a bad example. He was really bad. They won despite a Peyton on that one. But you get what I'm saying? Like, I would rather like have a couple bad years with even Phillip Rivers, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady. You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. Drew Brees. And I'm fine with that because
with the Saints, yeah, Drew Brees was not very good. Michael Thomas carried him the one season, and then he showed last year that he didn't really have it anymore when Michael Thomas was no longer there.
But like, look at it. Like, here's what I hate is everybody wants to be the GM, and everybody's like, well, you got to look at it at Goot's side, and yeah, you do. And Goot's good at his job, but here's the other thing: at some point, I like to, like, sit back and still be a fan. Like, you know, like, I like to be, when Brett left, even though I liked Aaron and I was ready to move on to Aaron because Brett fake retired every season, that's why that was such a different situation. Like, Aaron's begging to stay in Green Bay, saying he wants to finish his career in Green Bay and just signed a four-year deal. That's why I wasn't ready for Love. I was ready for Rodgers because every year it was gee shucks, tears, and Brett throwing 30 picks a season. You know, other than the last year where we go to the NFC title game and lose to the Giants, of course. But still, like, it sucks then when it's like, oh, we're starting a new season and Brett's not here anymore. Like, imagine being a Patriots fan, man, like last year and you got Cam Newton and then you're watching Brady and Tampa win another Super Bowl, throwing touchdowns to Gronk. Like, as a fan, I would rather go 7-9, you know, 7-10 now with Aaron Rodgers and Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb than, you know, start all over and win a Super Bowl. And I mean, you want to win Super Bowls, I get, but at the same time, like, I like watching Aaron Rodgers play football every Sunday. I want to continue to do so. I wasn't ready for Jordy to go, even if it was going to be like a down year. I just feel like certain dudes, like once-in-a-lifetime dudes, are guys that you could just
don't give up on.
Like, right, exactly.
Right, and as tough as some of those seasons were for Aaron Rodgers, like, you just got to stick to it. And there are other ways to fuel and put fire underneath him. And that's what the Jordan Love pick did. That's why he had at least part of the reason. And I think even the biggest Aaron Rodgers lover can admit it. It's part of the reason why he was an MVP again last season was because he felt a little bit of pressure for the first time in his 15-year career with the Green Bay Packers. But you can do it in different ways. It doesn't have to be spending your first round pick. I mean, hell, they could have picked up Josh Rosen off of the street and had a young quarterback who had some upside behind Aaron Rodgers. I know Josh Rosen had his terrible moments with in the league, but that was a dude who, coming out of college, another UCLA product that like everybody loved coming out of the draft and just didn't pan out when he was with Arizona because Kyler Murray all of a sudden came in and then he just lost his place. Maybe if Green Bay could have been his home, and then you don't spend a first round pick on a guy like Jordan Love, but you still have a little bit of fuel under Aaron Rodgers saying, hey, look, like if this doesn't turn out, you know, maybe Josh Rosen's our next quarterback. There were other ways to do it. I think that the Packers could have ignited that fire. Maybe it's not as much as spending a first round pick on a quarterback, but it could have been done, I do believe.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's what I kind of was hoping that they could do just because there were options. Or you get like a veteran backup, like a Ryan Fitzpatrick for a couple years. And then when you want to draft, you just realize that you're going to have a down year. But that's the thing with the Packers. Like, they never want to fully rebuild. And they didn't have to. I will say that. Like, they didn't have to with Rodgers because he sat behind Favre. And then when it was time for Rodgers to take over, he didn't have to take over a team like, you know, that Jared Goff has to take over where his number one option is Quintez Cephas. You know what I mean? Like, Right. Look at the options. He takes over and he's got Greg Jennings and he's got Donald Driver and he had Finley for a little bit there. And So, you know, then James Jones develops and Jordy develops because, you know, I never thought Jordy was going to be that good out of Kansas State. Like, he was a quarterback in high school. But so that was the one thing, though, is he stepped into a good situation, mm-hmm. which Mac Jones has proven, man. Like, if you step into the right situation, that's the thing. Like, we rag on these quarterbacks. Like, Trevor Lawrence has one bad game week one and everybody's like, bust. You know, and then, you know, same thing with Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson may be a bust, don't get me wrong. But, like, we also, like, look at the right situation, Tom Brady, mm-hmm. and now Mac Jones, where they have a defense, they have weapons, they have a play caller in Josh McDaniels. There's a big difference between being coached by Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels and Adam Gase and the Jets.
Yeah, it is something different. He is Ryan Horvath. I am Dan Plucker hanging out with you here on Toy Drive Live. We'll hit a quick break. Remember, though, go to 1250amthefan.com. It's the 15th annual Fan Toy Drive for Children's Wisconsin in Robin's Nest, courtesy of Blaine's Farm and Fleet and presented by Annex Wealth Management. We have a bunch of great sponsors. Lincoln Contractor Supply, J&J Contractors, Wendy's, Great Midwest Bank, AdamDeputy.com, Wisconsin Indoor Golf Center, Rawhide Youth Services, Lakeland University, Red Leaf Homes, and Donovan and Jorgensen Heating and Cooling, just to name a few. When we come back, though, I'll tell one of my stories with a children's hospital in our great country and experiences that I've had in my lifetime where I have a brother who has special needs and has been in and out of the hospital several times, and toys and different things has put a huge smile on his face in the past as well. That comes up next here on Toy Drive Live, and we'll also get into some college football talk, which we promised earlier, very shortly, here at Sam Plucker, Ryan Horvath, hanging out with you on The Fan.
WSSP Milwaukee. Donate today for the 15th annual Fan Toy Drive for Children's Wisconsin.
It is Christmas time.
Thank you for listening, and happy holidays from The Fan.
You're listening to Toy Drive Live as we broadcast for 24 straight hours. We're making one final push with The Fan's 15th annual Toy Drive for Children's Wisconsin and Robin's Nest, courtesy of Blaine's Farm and Fleet, and presented by Annex Wealth Management. Go to 1250amthefan.com to donate online or to find the nearest fire station to drop off your toys. Now back to the show with Dan Plucker on 1250 AM The Fan.
Almost 2 a.m. Central Time, almost 3 a.m. Eastern Time for Ryan Horvath, who's hanging out with us in Washington, D.C. So our thanks to Ryan Horvath for being a part of this special day. The Fan's 15th annual WSSP Toy Drive benefiting Children's Wisconsin and Robin's Nest, courtesy of Blaine's Farm and Fleet and presented by Annex Wealth Management. Use the hashtag FanToyDrive on social media to get in contact with us. You can go to 1250amthefan.com to donate. There's also a bunch of different fire stations across southeastern Wisconsin that will be giving, where you can drop off, I should say, your physical donations of toys. You can see that whole list on 1250amthefan.com as well. Our thanks to all of them for helping out, as well as all of our wonderful and great sponsors and you out there, fan listeners, who are donating as our shows and our 24-hour radiothon goes on. Right now, it's me, Dan Plucker, Ryan Horvath, hanging out. In about an hour, Toby Altizer from The Bart Winkler Show and Sam Schmitz from The Rami Show will be here as well. And real quick, I just wanted to tell a story from my life as well and my experience with children's hospitals throughout our great state. I grew up in California, so not here in Wisconsin. But my brother has special needs, and he had a lot of different health issues that went along with that. So he had his thyroid removed when I was growing up. He had open heart surgery to put a pacemaker in because he actually has a form of epilepsy as well that had some issues with his heart. And he's had just so many surgeries throughout his life, a lot of them when he was younger. And he was born with a hole in his heart. So even when he was a baby, like, he was having open heart issues and these different things. And so throughout my life, really, he was in and out of children's hospitals in California. And we always just had incredible help from the different nurses and doctors there in California. And I can very much imagine, and as Ryan Horvath can testify to as well, awesome service and help here at Children's Wisconsin too. And so I've been in those situations where, you know, I honestly had to question whether or not my brother was going to come out of different surgeries or different hospital visits alive. And it was a very difficult thing, or at least I know that he was in just miserable situations, not feeling well. And there were times where, like, my brother is just like me. He's a sports addict. So even, like, they would give him football cards or baseball cards from the 1980s wax packs that are worth basically nothing. You know, like $2 baseball card packs that would put a smile on his face, and he'd be looking through all these baseball cards and showing my dad, who was a collector for the longest time, and showing my mom all of these different names that he got, some of them that he recognized, others that he didn't. He'd be reading all of the stats on the back of the card, just like you and I do today if you're a collector. Or, you know, maybe it's not that. Maybe it's a stuffed animal for somebody who's not into sports, or all of these different things where it's a distraction. It puts a smile on their face, and it change. It could literally change the course of somebody's day to be given a gift. And that's the kind of gifts that we're collecting here to help out children here in Wisconsin, and with some unspeakable tragedies that have gone on in our community recently. They need even more help, and we're trying to make an even bigger push this year. So again, please go to 1250amthefan.com to donate and to drop off, find locations where you can drop off your toys to help out people like my family, like Horvat's family, and like many of your families out there that have had to be at Children's Wisconsin or different children's hospitals throughout our country, and specifically here in Wisconsin for us, and Robin's Nest as well, for children that really do need help, especially at a great, wonderful time of the year like Christmas time, like the holiday season. So again, if you could open up your hearts, please go to 1250 AM The Fan today to donate, because, like I said, I've experienced it firsthand. Ryan Horvat, my co-host here, has experienced it firsthand, and we know exactly how much it could mean in these different situations. So our thanks to you, our listeners, for our donation. Our thanks to all of our sponsors, and for all of those fire stations out there as well that are collecting toys, and to you, our listeners, for your continued donations. And real quick, we only got a couple of minutes here before the top of the hour, Ryan, and I want to get into a little bit of this MLB lockout talk before we get into all college football in the next hour, because we've talked some college football. I really wanted to get into it in the next hour of the show, go through our picks and bets for this upcoming conference championship weekend that maybe I'm a little too excited for, with Michigan finally playing in one of these games. But this MLB lockout and baseball free agency, kind of to this point, it felt rushed, but a lot of those deals did wind up getting done, Ryan. You know, Marcus Stroman, who you were on the entire time, goes to the Cubs last night right before the deadline. That was a pretty big deal for Chicago.
Yeah, that's a nice pickup for them. Maybe. We'll see. I mean, Stroman's great, but, like, and
it seemed like a lot of money.
Well, no, like, I'm fine with the money. It is a lot of money. I was fine with the money. I knew that's what he was going to want. And right. I also kind of knew about that deal, but I didn't want to.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it wasn't really my position. I'm not a baseball reporter. I'm just trying to get the best.
You should have been.
Jeff
Passan could have been tweeting your name. All these dudes could have been like, oh, Ryan Horvat was first.
I should have. I was playing Madden, though. I was beating up on the Atlanta Falcons, which that's probably why I'll never get verified on Twitter. I could have broke one of the biggest baseball stories of the day and said I was playing Madden. My aunt texted me at 9 a.m. like, hey, we're moving home. You could break this if you want. But if he changes his mind last minute, it's not on me. Ha, ha, ha. And that's what I was thinking. I was like, man, like, imagine if I'm wrong, like, my aunt's playing a joke on me.
Right.
Like, doesn't realize how big of a joke I'd be on Twitter. So I just left it alone and, like, hinted at it like all morning long, and then it happened. But we'll see, dude, because, like, I mean, yeah, they went out and they spent money on pitching last time they did that. They went out and got John Lester, but I don't think that's enough to compete with the Brewers, just Marcus Stroman and Kyle Hendricks. I mean, it doesn't look like they're going to bring back Wilson Contreras because they go out and grab a catcher. So, I mean, who's on that roster right now? Like, Frank Schwindel and a bunch of guys with, like, three names. So the Brewers, in my opinion, still the class of the Central. Well, that being said, I don't know. We'll see what the Cardinals are able to do, man, because the Cardinals are always around, and they got so hot the second half.
They're going to strike. I think the Cardinals are going to wind up with one of the top free agents remaining, and maybe even Carlos Correa. Like, I would not be shocked. Because the Cardinals are exactly the kind of team that would, like, not be in these conversations and then all of a sudden get Correa for, like,
oh yeah,
you know, like a third of what originally was thought that he would get, and then be like, oh, well, I'm just trying to win a ring in St. Louis in this great organization. All of a sudden, it'll just be like, whoa, where did this come from, you know?
Yeah, exactly, man. Like, and that's why I got a chuckle when I saw that the Cubs were in talks with him. Now, if they're able to pull something like that off, that's huge. Mm-hmm. The only reason that I have hope that the Cardinals won't end up with Correa or anybody like that is it's not through a trade where they'll give up like two prospects right. that we'll never hear of for somebody like Nolan Arenado or Paul Goldschmidt, the way that they always are able to. I mean, the bigger thing is that we're looking at a lockout, a labor agreement, the first lockout since, 1990? I mean, this is just absolutely ridiculous. And here's the thing. Like, there's no way opening day is not played on time, and I'll tell you why, man, because look at what we just got out of last year, a pandemic shortened season, 60 games. Like, there's just too much at stake here for not only the commissioner, Rob Manfred, but also the players. Like, they're going to have to come to an agreement because you can't have a strike. Like, we have to start on time. Like, or there's going to be people that never, and I know that we just got done talking about this during the pandemic, but people will never go back to baseball, man.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I was about to say too. Like, they need to come up with an agreement for the sake of the sport. Like, football is running away. NBA just is all of a sudden one of the most popular sports in America too, and quickly pulling away from baseball in that second spot. I mean, like, even look at, like, NBA basketball cards. Just if you're, like, in your free time, go on eBay and look up a price of a box of, like, the most generic NBA basketball cards, NBA Hoops 2021, and it's, like, a $50 pack that retail is sold for, like, $20 because all of these people just want to buy basketball cards and be like LeBron and buy the shoes and all of these different things. Like, the NBA knows how to market their players and knows how to market themselves as well, to put themselves in this conversation at least a little bit with the NFL, because and I don't know how they're doing it. They're doing a great job of it. They played almost as much as baseball, obviously about half the games, but like, it feels like the season is just always going. It almost feels like there is no NBA offseason. Like, when this year started for the Bucks, I was just like, we just won a championship, like, and we're already back to the next season. It feels like this doesn't even matter at this point. We're all still riding high on the Bucks championship here in Milwaukee, and this next season has already begun. It was just like, what is going on? But the NBA, for whatever reason, is increasingly growing in popularity, and it's cool. Like, people want to be cool and be like all of these different superstars and stuff. But baseball, it just doesn't seem that way. It seems like it's more and more turning into old man yelling at cloud game and not like fun or having these superstars. Because a lot of the guys that were there, you know, the Derek Jeters, the Alex Rodriguez, David Ortiz, like these superstar names that so many people grew up with and really enjoyed watching and knew, are all retiring. And they're no longer in baseball. And so I think starting with Mike Trout, they made a huge issue not just promoting the hell out of this dude like he was MJ. You know, they could have done that. He's in LA his entire career. And
yeah, we know nothing about him.
Exactly. People know nothing about him. It's crazy. It's crazy. And at least they've started to market Tatis a little bit better. But like, Mike Trout is and has already had like 10 times the career that Tatis has, obviously, in the young portion of his career. Tatis is an exciting player. Maybe he gets to Trout's level at some point. But literally, Mike Trout is probably the best baseball player in the history of the game. There is a real probability and possibility that Mike Trout is the best player ever. And if he walked into a mall in Milwaukee today, nobody would know who he was.
Yeah, it's crazy. And like, football is always going to be the king, right? But I will say that the NBA does the best job at marketing their players. Like, if Kevin Durant walks into a grocery store in Idaho, everybody's gonna know, even if you don't watch the NBA. Like, if LeBron James goes somewhere, everybody's gonna know who LeBron James is. Like, even in the NFL, like, you know what I mean? Like, if Christian McCaffrey goes into just your regular bar, people might not notice him. Yeah, like the diehards and even some casuals will, but the NBA does a tremendous job. And that's the thing about baseball. They just, it hasn't been since the 90s. Like, and that was the difference. Like, growing up, man, like, I wanted to be Ken Griffey Jr. and I'd wear my hat backwards and we'd play home run derby, you know? And Sammy Sosa, Mark McGuire with the home run chase, Barry Bonds, like, everybody knew who those guys were. And here's the thing. Like, I know this might sound, I know the guy might not be the most popular because he was the, you know, he's running the Cubs, but here's a way to fix baseball. Take Rob Manfred and blast him to the moon and put Theo Epstein in that position. Somebody that's young, somebody that loves the sport, because Rob Manfred doesn't love the sport. No, he called the World Series trophy just a piece of metal. Theo Epstein loves the sport. Like, that's why when Theo left the Cubs, I was like, okay, he's going to leave and he's going to do something bigger. I want to see him become the commissioner of Major League Baseball because I think he'll fix the sport. I think he'll change the rules to where they need to be. You know, we'll get the universal DH, which growing up I never wanted. But you know what? I've come around on it. I don't want to see the pitchers bad anymore. We don't need Corbin Burns or Brandon Woodruff getting injured, you know, running to first. You know what I mean? And everybody wants more offense, blah, blah, blah. I get it. But not even like things like that. But I just feel like marketing the players, like making sure minor league players are getting taken care of a little bit better. Because I worry about the future of baseball. Like with minor league baseball, like a lot of these organizations have already been shut down, weren't able to come back from the pandemic. Now, like, that's where you're developing the talent. And also, really quickly, I'll say, like, I don't understand Major League Baseball not being able to market their players because their players are the most likable. Like, you could tell, like, going into the clubhouse, like, on a Sunday, like, none of the players want to do interviews, but, like, look at the Brewers, like, all regular nice guys. And I'm not saying it's not like that in the NBA, but, like, man, you think James Harden's just like a regular dude? A nice dude? Yeah, probably. But a regular dude? No. Like, no. Regular dudes aren't going to all white parties on a Wednesday night, like dropping billions of dollars in the strip club and having their jerseys retired. But look at, like, you know what I mean? Like Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burns. Like, they're just, most of those guys are just like regular guys, baseball players. They just go home and there's like even Ryan Braun, just like regular guy, like a dad.
And it's crazy too, because like these guys
market
like,
them.
Even like Corbin Burns and Brandon Woodruff, if you're talking money too, like, in a couple of years, they're going to be making just as much, if not more, than the James Hardens and Kevin Durants of the world. But for whatever reason, like, they seem almost more untouchable. Like, NBA teams and players have superstardom. And I don't think there's any baseball player out there right now that you would call, like, in the media world, a superstar. Like, if Kevin Durant does something, it'll make national headlines and national news. It won't just make, like, sports headlines and sports news. For baseball, I don't know if there is that. Like, maybe teams will. But, like, if Mike Trout went out and did something kind of, you know, rambunctious or crazy like James Harden or Kyrie Irving, like, that will make national news if James Harden or Kyrie Irving did something. If Mike Trout did it, or Fernando Tatis, or even Christian Yelich, I don't think it gets to that same stage.
Really quick, because I know we're at the top of the hour, but who do you think? I know Trout's the best player, and I'm a big Ohtani guy, not just because he won me a bunch of money, because he's doing something we hadn't seen anybody do for 100 years.
For
you know
sure.
what I mean?
Uh-huh.
But who do you think is the most well-known Major League Baseball player on the planet? Like, he goes somewhere and everybody recognizes him. Because I don't know that I could – maybe, like, I was going to say Bryce Harper
that's
when he had
who,
that.
That's
I don't
the
even
first
know,
name
though.
That came up to
really,
the only The only reason why is the beard and the hair. Like, it's like – distinct. You can see the difference, and maybe you see that because, like, you know, his helmet will pop off while he's running.
I don't know,
and
though,
like,
man.
All the girls were ooing and aahing at him in high school.
Like,
I feel
let me
like.
Ask you this. If your wife sees Bryce Harper, because if my wife saw Bryce Harper like at like Whole Foods or at, you know, Pick and Save. There we go. If my wife sees him at Pick and Save, then she would not call me like, oh my God, I saw Mike Trout. But if she saw Aaron Rodgers or, you know, Jordy Nelson or Mason Crosby or Giannis or Chris Middleton or Drew Holiday or Pat Connaughton, she'd be like, oh my God, I saw Bobby Portis at the grocery store.
You're right.
But she would not know even Bryce Harper or Clayton Kershaw.
You're right.
Maybe the best, you know, like, or Max Scherzer, maybe the greatest postseason pitcher ever.
Yeah, I think literally the only baseball player my wife would notice and maybe say, hey, I think that guy is Christian Yelich. That's maybe the only one. Or maybe Ryan Braun,
locally
here in Milwaukee, but nobody national. There's no chance. Like, Miguel Cabrera could walk right in front of us and I would be starstruck and my wife would be like, who was that? Because that's just the way that it is. It's crazy. I don't know. Baseball has to do a better job with that. And hopefully after these CBAs, both them and the players can make a little bit more money and market their players a lot better, because right now it's absolutely miserable and they got a lot to work out. And John Heyman joined the Big Show the other day. And if you missed that, you can find it on Big Show Network, or you can't use the Odyssey app to rewind because it's 24 hours. It's past 24 hours in the past, but go to BigShowNetwork.com. He kind of broke down this whole lockout, what exactly is going on and how we can kind of decipher and a timetable even for when he thinks baseball can return. So if you want to hear more about that, listen to the expert of the experts and John Heyman, who joined the Big Show earlier this week. But right now, it's Sam Plucker, Ryan Horvath hanging out with you. We're going to hit a quick break here on the Fan Toy Drive
24-hour radiothon. When we come back, we're going to get into this. We're finally going to get into this college football talk and all these championship games coming in this weekend. We'll give our picks and our bets against the spread as well. That comes up next here on The Fan.
WSSP Milwaukee. Donate today for the 15th annual Fan Toy Drive for Children's Wisconsin.
It is Christmas time.
Thank you for listening and happy holidays from The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I met a guy recently who told me that he spends roughly $250,000 a month. I talked to another person recently who made $50 million at the age of 30. What do you do with that money? How do you spend it? How do you not spend it? What do you invest in? If you meet a rich person, these are questions everyone wants to know, but you're too embarrassed to ask. That's the whole premise of MoneyWise. We talk to real people who have made a significant amount of money, and we ask them all about their finances. My name's Sam Parr, and the podcast is called MoneyWise. That's one word, MoneyWise. You can find MoneyWise wherever you get your podcasts.